Ali Pasha by Alexandre Dumas. Chapter 1. The beginning of the 19th century was a time of audacious enterprises and strange vicissitudes of fortune. Whilst Western Europe in turn submitted and struggled against a sub-lieutenant who made himself an emperor, who at his pleasure made kings and destroyed kingdoms, the ancient eastern part of the continent, like mummies which preserve but the semblance of life, was gradually tumbling to pieces and getting parceled out amongst bold adventurers who skirmished over its ruins. Without mentioning local revolts which produced only short-lived struggles and trifling changes of administration, such as that of Djezzar Pasha, who refused to pay tribute because he thought himself impregnable in his citadel of St. Jean d'Acre, or that of Passavandoglu Pasha, who planted himself on the walls of Widin as defender of the Janissaries against the institution of the regular militia decreed by Sultan Selim at Stamboul, there were wider spread rebellions which attacked the constitution of the Turkish Empire and diminished its extent, amongst them that of Cherni George, which raised Serbia to the position of a free state, of Muhammad Ali, who made his Pashalik of Egypt into a kingdom, and finally that of the man whose history we are about to narrate, Ali Tepelini, Pasha of Janina, whose long resistance to the suzerain power preceded and brought about the regeneration of Greece. Ali's own will counted for nothing in this important movement. He foresaw it, but without ever seeking to aid it, and was powerless to arrest it. He was not one of those men who place their lives and services at the disposal of any cause indiscriminately, and his sole aim was to acquire and increase a power of which he was both the guiding influence and the end and object. His nature contained the seeds of every human passion, and he devoted all his long life to their development and gratification. This explains his whole temperament. His actions were merely the natural outcome of his character confronted with circumstances. Few men have understood themselves better or been on better terms with the orbit of their existence, and as the personality of an individual is all the more striking, in proportion as it reflects the manners and ideas of the time and country in which he has lived, so the figure of Ali Pasha stands out, if not one of the most brilliant, at least one of the most singular in contemporary history. From the middle of the 18th century, Turkey had been a prey to the political gangrene of which she is vainly trying to cure herself today, and which, before long, will dismember her in the sight of all Europe. Anarchy and disorder reigned from one end of the empire to the other. The Osmanli race, bred on conquest alone, proved good for nothing when conquest failed. It naturally, therefore, came to pass when Sobieski, who saved Christianity under the walls of Vienna, as before his time Charles Martel had saved it on the plains of Poitiers, had set bounds to the wave of Muslim westward invasion, and definitely fixed a limit which it should not pass, that the Osmanli warlike instincts recoiled upon themselves. The haughty descendants of Ortogrul, who considered themselves born to command, seeing victory forsake them, fell back upon tyranny. Vainly did reason expostulate that oppression could not long be exercised by hands which had lost their strength, and that peace imposed new and different labors on those who no longer triumphed in war. They would listen to nothing, and as fatalistic when condemned to a state of peace as when they marched forth conquering and to conquer, they cowered down in magnificent listlessness, leaving the whole burden of their support on conquered peoples. Like ignorant farmers, who exhaust fertile fields by forcing crops, they rapidly ruined their vast and rich empire by exorbitant exactions. Inexorable conquerors and insatiable masters, with one hand they flogged their slaves, and with the other plundered them. Nothing was superior to their insolence, nothing on a level with their greed. They were never glutted, and never relaxed their extortions. But in proportion as their needs increased on the one hand, so did their resources diminish on the other. Their oppressed subjects soon found that they must escape at any cost from oppressors whom they could neither appease nor satisfy. Each population took the steps best suited to its position and character. Some chose inertia, others violence. The inhabitants of the plains, powerless and shelterless, bent like reeds before the storm and evaded the shock against which they were unable to stand. The mountaineers planted themselves like rocks in a torrent and dammed its course with all their might. On both sides arose a determined resistance, different in method, similar in result. In the case of the peasants, labor came to a standstill. In that of the hill folk, open war broke out. The grasping exactions of the tyrant dominant body produced nothing from waste lands and armed mountaineers. Destitution and revolt were equally beyond their power to cope with, and all that was left for tyranny to govern was a desert enclosed by a wall. But all the same, the wants of a magnificent sultan, descendant of the prophet and distributor of crowns, must be supplied, and to do this, the Sublime Porte needed money. Unconsciously imitating the Roman Senate, the Turkish Divan put up the empire for sale by public auction. All employments were sold to the highest bidder, pashas, beys, kadis, ministers of every rank, and clerks of every class had to buy their posts from their sovereign and get the money back out of it.